I haven't really woken up. Oh, until I've had my McDonald's breakfast deal. And I know this is true because before breakfast, I put my phone in the refrigerator and couldn't find the keys that were already in my hand.
Nothing gets the morning going like the first sip of an iced coffee. Get any size and any flavor for 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Hey there, animation fans, and I want to welcome you to this very short but very, very special episode of the AFA podcast, where we were lucky enough to have a chance to talk with Glenn Keane about his film that just came out on Netflix called Over the Moon. If you haven't checked it out already, I highly recommend doing so. It is a really wonderful film, and we had a lot of fun talking about it. So, well, like I said, it is short, but I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so this is our interview for Over the Moon and your involvement for the blog that I co-run with a good friend of mine called Animation for Adults, where we cover, you know, Disney animation, DreamWorks animation, independent short films, basically the works, and appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about this very, very charming little film that I had the opportunity to both watch and rewatch this morning. I'm really happy to talk about it with you.
Thanks, Rachel. By the way, I'm familiar with Animation for Adults, and I think it's really cool that you do something that I've always felt like animation to me is created by adults, and they, whether it's a children's film or not, you really make the films for yourself so that others can feel the way you feel about it. It's really a wonderful thing that you're doing.
Well, thank you. Gosh, you have no idea how much that means to me that you're actively looking at what we do. So thank you very much. That just made both mine and my co-editor, Chris, who unfortunately couldn't be here. But Chris Perkins, who co-owns the site with me, that would be a huge feather in his cap as well. So he does a lot of the hard work in terms of the design of the website. So yeah. Thank you.
Well, keep going.
Thank you so much. So I kind of wanted to start off with learning about how you got involved with this project in particular, because I know you've been doing a lot of, you know, kind of your own like independent, like short films. Like I like Duet and of course the amazing Dear Basketball. But I just was curious how you became involved on this project. Were you approached for it, or do you see like it was happening and you're like, I want in?
Well, if I had known that it was happening, yeah, I probably would have said that. But I mean, I was developing my own idea, and it's been with me for, you know, since 1996, and that was my intention. I had just finished Dear Basketball, and I just keep putting these other projects aside because something more wonderful comes. I mean, I really do believe that the best things in life are a gift, like Kobe calling and asking me to do Dear Basketball, and then I was presenting Dear Basketball out in Annecy and giving a talk called Thinking Like a Child. And as I talked about Thinking Like a Child, I just pretty much shared everything about animation that's important to me. Particularly the characters that speak to me the most are the ones that believe the impossible is possible, like Ariel and Beast and Aladdin. And as I was talking, Melissa Cobb, who had become the head of Netflix Animation, was in the audience sitting next to Pei-Lin Chow, who was the head of Pearl Studios, and they had the script Over the Moon that was all about a character that did believe the impossible was possible. So when they approached me and I read the script, it felt like both Jenny Rim, my producer, and I felt, we got to do this, no matter what. What we had on the burner, it will wait. Let's get this movie going.
All right. That is awesome. And I understand you had those wonderful staff at Pearl Studio was helping you out. And then you co-directed the movie as well. And I realize that this is actually not the first time that you, because you've been animation director, for basically most of your tenure at Disney Animation Studios. And you were, there was a plan for you to be involved with directing Tangled, but I understand that you had to bow out of that for certain reasons. But this is your return to be able to sit in the director's chair. What was that like? Because I know sometimes, especially with working in the film industry, regardless of whether you're an animator or not, it's important to have to be able to wear those multiple hats. And I was just curious to how that was, that experience was like.
Well, I was raised at Disney from the time I was 20 years old for about 40 years animating there. And I was taught by the 9 old men who referred to themselves as directing animators. They would take sections of the film and design the characters and the story and work the cinematography. And all of those things were part of what they did. And I approached my career the same way. Sections of the movies that I worked on, what I didn't have to do was worry about how you were going to get the film over the goal line. That was the director putting it all together. I got to have the fun of living in the skin of the character and animating. So on this film, I realized, I'm the guy with the map. Okay. And so it was very important that I have the kind of a map that really gives you confidence. Audrey Wells had written such a beautiful script with such depth that I knew that we could get to the finish line and get to it quickly without throwing out the movie as so common to start a film and then stop and throw it out and start again. And mm-hmm. how much money is spent and is just poured down the drain. In this case, pretty much every penny is up on the screen in this movie.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's it. It really shows too. And I'm also like, I was amazed as I was watching the movie, like, as obviously because of your background in Disney, I was amazed at how much the movie felt, similar to it, basically had some of those like similarities to the Disney films that I grew up watching, like Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid. But it did it in such a genuine way that it still had its own identity to it. Like it, even while it followed like certain, you could call like same stepping stones, it's still like you could see the film in its own like unique form. Like nothing else looks like it. Nothing else sounds like it. It's got, it's drawing on very beautiful mythology, which just like, I know Chinese lore is just found like so much good stuff to take from there. But another thing I wanted to bring to your, talk to you about, because it was really curious because you're such a prominent figure in when it comes to 2D animation, and this was a 3D picture or computer generated animation, which I know you've been kind of like, I'm trying to remember what it was called. Like there's an idea that where you're taking like kind of these 2D sketches and you're kind of using that as like a guideline for the 3D models. Could you elaborate on that and how that the film got its look?
Well, I approached this film really the best of both worlds, that you bring hand-drawn into it and into the CG. Computer animation is a little like a used car salesman. You go over a lot and with an idea of like specifically what you're looking for. Well, they don't have that, but here's something that would be a lot easier. Why don't you just take that? You don't listen to that. You have to communicate clearly, this is what it needs to be. And drawing is so important in that process. Michelangelo said design, or as it is called by another name, drawing, is the root and fountainhead and substance of all sculpture, painting and science. Let him who has attained this know that he possesses a great treasure. And so I think I drew more in this movie than I did on Little Mermaid or Beauty and the Beast or any others. Over pretty much every shot, there's drawings. And at about halfway through the film, animation, we were moving at such an incredible speed, getting this film going with the music and the story in so many different areas. I asked my friend John Kars to come in, and I had worked with John on Tangled, and
right.
He had such a great knowledge of CG. So he and I could do some tag team critiques over the animators. We had 120 animators up in Vancouver that were working on this at Sony. So it was great to have somebody who really understood me and that I could trust. Like, it's in this section here, John, I know, is going to deliver really what it is that I'm looking for. And so great team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I can tell, and even like some of the characters that show up in the movie, like, you know, characters like the little lunette, like Mooncake characters, as well as Gobi. I remember watching like the musical sequence with him, and I'm just like, I'm looking at him. It's like, I can tell it's like, it's still computer generation. He's still sitting next to Feifei, and they still look like they're inhabiting the same space, but he has this very unique look to him in terms of how expressive he is. Like, I'm more used to seeing something like that in a 2D picture.
Yeah.
And I was really, really impressed by that. And like, it's part of the reason why I fell in love with like some of the Disney shorts, like Paper Man, and some of the stuff where you can really see there's experimentation happening with, you know, that style of preparing that kind of computer generated animation by basically telling the computer, no, we're not going to follow algorithms. We're going to try and have these imperfections because these imperfections are important.
Yeah. Yeah. The little extra things that Gobi had, and it's not just in the design of Gobi, it's also in the way he moves. I remember one shot where it was one of the first shots, I think it was the first shot, where Gobi is actually running down the side of a hill on the moon. And it felt too much like an earth animal in some way. And it's like, no. And you can't just say, well, make it bouncier. Or make it quirkier. Or you have to really be specific. Mm-hmm. And so up that Sony, Dave Smith, the head of visual effects, they had developed a way that I could draw over each frame, and that you could go to the next frame, do a quick sketch, the next frame, do another quick sketch, and then you could play it all back, and the character would be moving. You could do it in 5 minutes, and I did this little animation over top of their animation so they could see, oh, that's what he's talking about. And that then became kind of a touchstone that they translated into many, many, many other shots afterwards.
I find that absolutely fascinating how there's been, like, at least in like early when CG animation was first kind of hitting the big time, you know, like with the when Toy Story first came out, and then Pixar was making a name for themselves, then DreamWorks got into the game, and just how it seemed like there was this talk about like, oh, CG animation is going to take over 2D animation, when look at it now, look at how much those skills that were perfected by those masters, by the nine old men, in terms of 2D animation, and you're basically kind of using those as like a guideline to make CG animation look better. At least in my opinion, it looks incredible. Absolutely.
Rachel, I love the way you're describing it. Thank you for saying that. This film, besides the general designs of the film and all of that, what was most important to me, what really drew me to this film, was this, what's going on inside Feifei's head. Like, I was taught by the nine old men, like, Glenn, don't animate what the character's doing. Animate what the character's thinking and feeling. Mm. And in Feifei, she's such a smart kid. She knows science and math and physics and technology. And so there's all of this side that she's a product of her dad and his love of science. But then she's also the product of her mom. And this faith, this seeing what others can't see, and the spark of both of those together is so bright. And how do you animate that you really have to build it in early on with the rigging and the designing. It's like you are designing. Feifei's face is like a Lamborghini. I mean, it is so beautifully crafted, and you just like, okay, now take it out on the road and really put everything that we designed into this, make it happen. Mm-hmm. So many subtle, beautiful moments that it's about animating what I call the point of discovery, where the idea happens. You see it in her eyes.
Absolutely. And gosh, there are so many characters that I loved watching. Like Feifei was definitely number one. Loved Gobi. I loved Chang'e. And I know my partner Chris would be remiss for having me not mention one of the cutest animal sidekicks ever put to animated film, Bungie. That rabbit is so freaking cute.
Bungie was pretty wonderful. Steve McLeod, our head of story, really started bringing Bungie to life, as he would use Bungie as a way of always reflecting whatever Feifei was feeling. A little look here or there, and it was just like a little mirror, and it was so funny. But Bungie was the most difficult character to design, because most of Bungie is Puff. And
little fluff.
And so we would design her, you know, I did drawings like, okay, this is the way she's supposed to look. But then when they showed me the CG version, it looks like somebody hosed down your fluffy dog, and it just like looks like a rat. Like, no. Well, it'll turn out. And you had to really guess and hope. Then when the fur kind of goes poof, suddenly there's Bungie.
That you're not going to lose the eyes and the mouth and all of the computer-generated fur and texture.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Rachel, I'm so sorry we're running out of time, but if you could do one or two more questions, that's okay.
I just have one more question before we finish things up. Because of what's going on in the world right now, I think that this is an important question to ask. But for a lot of aspiring animators, is there any advice you would have to aspiring animators, people who are just starting out, or people who are still in the process of learning, since, you know, going to school and all that is like, it's really tumultuous right now. Like, I'm not want to get into that much, but would you have any suggestions of what people can do in order to further education, or better yet, be able to practice or find or connect with other people?
Yeah, well, here's my office. So this is the first time I've been back in my office since we left in March. Netflix shut down, and I'm still the only one in here. We had to clear out. And we all went to our homes and worked. But before that, we had already been living creating this film all around the world. This was that little monitor on the wall. I called it my window to the world. We would gather around, and then there's this little round table there. That was my family's coffee table when I was a kid growing up. And I thought, someday I'm going to make a movie around that table. And this is that movie. But last night I was speaking to CalArts. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lee, and this topic came up, and I just realized that how important it is as an artist, as animators, to find those people that connect us to others. They're our connectors. They're the producers. They're the ones that build a team around us. Artists like myself, I really need people like that. And as you get to know other people who are connectors, I have a feeling, Rachel, you're probably a connector. and those are bridge people. They connect. And no time in history has it ever been more important for animators to be connected to bridge people. And that the world, it's possible for you to work with somebody in Ghana right now, in Africa. You could be working with somebody in Holland. You could be working with somebody in France. animation really is this wonderful connected network that's worldwide, and that you can find artists like you, find people who have those connections, and find ways of working with them, just the way we're talking on Zoom. Mm-hmm. This film, we were in the midst of our deadline. It was 120 animators going full speed. All of the color, we still had not recorded the score. And I'll never forget, in March, Jenny Rim, our producer, came in and said, we have to leave now. Like, Netflix is shutting everything down. In a half hour, we were gone. The coffee cups were, when I came in, were still there. So were the coats on chairs. It was like the day the earth stood still.
Oh my goodness.
And we all went to our homes. And yet the next day was a deadline. And then the next week and the next week. And just by the desire of believing the impossible is possible, we did it. The film actually got done. And it just gives me such enormous confidence that the message of this film so much is about, Feifei says, I just wish life could go back the way it was. Mm-hmm. But we don't live life going backwards. It's always going forward. And it's through that chamber of exquisite sadness. It's about confronting the thing that is really difficult in our life. On the other side, there's something really wonderful. And I really believe that all of this somehow is going to be that much better. And that as animators, you're born at this time. This is your time. And that there's going to be something that animation will become because of the people, the very people that you are writing for, that I'm talking to right now, that that will find a new way, something fresh, something wonderful. And I really believe it will be global, how animation is going to become.
Agreed. Oh my goodness. Thank you again so much. I know we've already running out of time, but I wish I could talk to you more. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you, Rachel. It's great to meet you. Keep doing a wonderful job with your whole blog. It's fantastic.
I want to give a special thank you to our contest at Netflix, as well as Glenn Keane for taking the time to appear on our little podcast here. And I thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening. It was a great time, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Everyone, take care and stay safe.
Do you ever watch the earth lounge around and see it floating?
I don't lounge.
A swirl of white clouds and blue.
Nope.
Well, I do. It changes every day. It spins and turns and twirls away. It just keeps rolling on. And that is wonderful, hey, hey.
I just want things to go back to how they were.
Look at the world surrounding you.
So much to explore at Total Wine and More. Pinot Noirs, Grigios, Champagnes, and Chardonnays. Plus more than 2,500 beers and bourbon barrel-aged. Tequila, rum, scotch, and gin, vermouth that's extra dry. Hard seltzers and single malts, so many for you to try.
Now offering delivery in select markets. See details at TotalWine.com/delivery. Drink responsibly, B21.